VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility, there's more to iPhone.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
You're listening to The Times. Go to thetimes.co.uk.
I mock you, Glastonbury. There's Percy Faith and his orchestra. The Gael from Impanina. No mud, just pure football here. This is the Game podcast from The Times, and I'm Tony Evans. And this is the fourth of six special shows from this year's World Cup from Brazil. Joining me today is James Scowcroft, who's all the way from France. And down the line from Brazil is James Ducker. Right, we're going to start off talking about Arjen Robben. His last-minute, dive has caused some controversy over there. James, what's your feeling? Former striker, you're in the area, you're in the last minutes of a big game. Do you go down like that? What did you think of it?
I thought it was a penalty, that's what I thought of it. I think he's made the most of it, but that's what he's tried to do. And can you really blame him? If you were supporting his side, or you were Dutch, would you be moaning this morning? I don't think so. I think the one before he's been a little bit over the top and possibly could have stayed on his feet. But, you know, he's worked so hard, Robin, to win that opportunity and just to sort of nick the ball before. You know, I don't think anyone really can blame him.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't believe he even dived in there, James. I mean, I just thought it was...
Well, it's just last minute of the game. You just surely just show him out of space, really. You just show him out of the pit. Worst case scenario, give a corner away.
Over to Brazil. James, Marquez has been a liability all his career. He's dived into challenges all the time. You know, he's got a reputation for that. Isn't this one of the situations where you just jockey Robin? You know that if you go anywhere near him, he's going to go down.
I couldn't agree more, Tony. As exaggerated as Robin's fall was in some eyes, that would be deplorable. There was contact. I thought it was not particularly smart defending from a guy who should know better, who's been around the block. You know how quick-footed he is. You know how elusive he is. If ever there is a player that you stand your ground, on, keep on your toes on, and don't sort of launch in on, it's Arjen Robben. That's exactly what he's looking for, and he's very, very skilled at sort of winning those fouls. And yeah, you know, there'll be a debate about the sort of the exaggerated manner of the fall, but I'm not justifying that. But it was a penalty, and they can bleat all they want about it, but it was a penalty.
Back to France, James. What did you think of Mexico? I mean, they played so well for, you know, the vast majority of the game, and then the weight of where they were seemed to come down on them. They started doing things that they wouldn't do. I mean, you know, if that would have happened in the second minute rather than, you know, the second minutes of injury time, I'm sure they wouldn't have defended like that. And they started to get a bit panicky. The weight of that fifth game, the qualification for the quarterfinals, did you think it was beginning to show on them?
I think it's one of those. I think we've seen a few teams do it, really. They're getting that last 5 minutes and they can see that they're there, but all of a sudden pressure affects people, Tony. People do, you know, funny things that they wouldn't do under pressure, i.e. in the first 5 minutes when you're a little bit more relaxed than what you are in the last minute. And another thing is it's tired legs as well, especially in the heat that the Mexico-Holland game was played in. I just think there's all of a sudden starts a panic, and maybe there is where you need experience, you need some cool heads. And, you know, if you look at Holland, the experience they had, I think that came through in the final 15, 20 minutes of that game.
Yeah, we'll come back to that in a minute, but I want to go over to Brazil and talk to James about the other bad boy that's all the conversations this week, Luis Suarez. With, you know, he's got the most preposterous excuse since the Trans Rio Platinum Spanish excuse over the everything. He's kind of, he's overshadowed much of the tournament over here. James, do you think the sanctions they've had against him, ban him from football until November, is fair? And do you think the Uruguayan response, calling people fascists and things like that, is perhaps the most ridiculous thing you've ever seen in football?
I think the Uruguayan response has been quite extraordinary. I mean, I think the Uruguayan president sort of had his say today, hasn't he? I think he's called FIFA sons of bitches or something to that effect. The worst bit of the response for me was the applauding from Uruguayan journalists to Tabarez's sort of long sermon about the whole sort of FIFA ruling. I just thought, on every level, that sort of undermine what journalism is supposed to be about. They've shown absolutely no objectivity whatsoever in that country. They've wholesale bought all the drivel that Suarez, Tabarez, and the Uruguayan sort of hierarchy, FA, and squad in general have been spouting, and it's been pretty nauseating to witness. And I know that feeling is shared by a sort of a large number of the international sort of media. In terms of the actual punishment, what's quite interesting here is how clear FIFA have been in terms of sort of establishing whether his prior sort of record for biting has sort of been taken into account here. There's very, very sort of blurred lines. I think our colleague Oliver Kay sort of suggested this week that FIFA seems to have been making up as they go. If the banned Suarez as they have for sort of 4 months from all football, then clearly you would think that they've taken his record of biting Otman Bakal and Branislav Ivanovic into consideration. And if that has been the case, then I totally understand and agree with the extent of the ban. I think the grey area is that if it was sort of considered a first offence in sort of international terms, whether the actual punishment in that sense is too great. I mean, we all look at it and think it's his third offence, throw the book at him, and I'm glad they have. But if you actually sort of get into the semantics of the situation, I think FIFA really sort of need to be clear on it. And I can understand in that sense sort of Liverpool's upset, but there is this sort of grey area.
One of the things that bothers me is, as bad as it is biting, and he deserves to be punished, it's leg-breaking challenges that get me, things that can end people's career. As a professional, I mean, how do you view it? Is it over the top, the punishment? Is it because it's so otherworldly, you know, for want of a better phrase, the biting? Because we see people punching each other and kicking each other and elbowing each other all the time. And aren't they the things, the really violent things that can hurt people, that we should get out of the game?
You know, there's the argument that footballers are role models, and I think that's, you know, with all the advertisement that goes on now, with all the, you know, like, come through Paris this morning and there's a massive Adidas advert with Suarez right in the middle. And you know, these are role models and kids will buy the boots that these players wear. And I just think, you know, punching and leg-breaking tackles, we've tried to stamp that out. But, you know, biting, I've never, ever come across it before. And that just has to go. I think maybe FIFA probably reacted a little bit too quickly with the worldwide ban. Maybe he should have been kicked out of this World Cup. And then possibly it could have just been a 12-month international ban and he could have gone back to his club football. You know, maybe something could have happened there because, you know, like I say, Liverpool Football Club have worked hard really to stick by him last year, and it's a massive blow for Liverpool really. But it's something that has to be stamped down. I actually feel, I wouldn't say sorry is the right word, but I just think it's something that he needs help with really, because if you look at it, it's just a reaction before he's even thought about it.
Yeah, I mean, Liverpool are absolutely appalled. And I think there was a realisation at Anfield that this sort of thing was going to go on, that would happen again. And I think that was part of the thought process in the move to shift him out to Barcelona or Real Madrid. I can't see him wearing a Liverpool shirt again. And I think the deal will be done fairly quickly now. I want to move to another ex-Liverpool man, Hodgson, who took England into the World Cup with a fair amount of positivism, a lot of pace, and then took them out in misery. But, like, I can't believe how muted the criticism has been of him you know, it seems to me I'm the only one who wrote a severely critical piece about him in the whole national press. And I said, frankly, he made decisions that a Sunday League coach should be embarrassed about. What's your view of Hodgson? And can you believe the reaction over here, James?
What concerns me is that, and this is, I suppose, part of a wider problem, but he's been in charge for sort of coming up for 2.5 years, and yet there is no identity at all to that national team. I watch them and I have no idea what their style of play is. We have no sort of readily sort of identifiable style of play. And what concerned me about the first two games was against Italy, they sort of seemed to have this approach that we'll try and beat them in the first half an hour, which is not really the sort of way I would say to approach tournament football. But at least there was some pace and purpose going forward in an attacking sense. And then the Uruguay game, it's sort of back to one-paced, one-dimensional football. And there just seemed to be no continuity whatsoever. I mean, you see some of the other teams in this tournament, and they've switched superbly between, say, a four-man defence and a three-man defence. Holland and Chile have done that to very good effect. There's a clear sort of pattern of play. There's a clear style. There's a clear ethos that is coming down from the coach. The players know exactly what he's demanded of them. Those first two games, Italy and Uruguay, just not sure the players know what is expected of them. It's almost like sort of, let's have a go, let's make it up as we go. I gave Hodgson the benefit of the doubt in the Euros because he'd sort of jettisoned in, at a late stage. I thought they did reasonably well given the circumstances there. But I think there's a lot less excuse. I think there's a lot less excuse here. I mean, they really have stank Brazil out, and that takes some sort of doing in what has been an otherwise brilliant tournament.
Hodgson has a lot of pace in the squad. You know, we see that pace scares people. Running at people scares people. You know, we've seen what the Dutch Van Gaal did with it. And yet he managed to waste that pace and accentuate the negatives that they had in the squad, like Steven Gerrard's lack of legs. And as an ex-player, you must have looked at that and thought, what's he doing? What's your view of that?
I think, we have got a lot of pace, and we haven't always had pace in the squad. If you look at football in general, this is in the Premier League and it's happening in the World Cup. Spain against Holland was a prime example. More and more teams, I'd say a high percentage teams, are now playing counter-attacking football, and that's defending deep and then thinking, right, we're going to suck you in and then we're going to punish the space in behind with pace. But you've got to have your noses in front to do that at times. It's very hard to chase a game like we did against Italy, like we did against Uruguay, when they get the nose in front, they're going to defend deep. And if you defend deep, that just nullifies that pace, really. So you've got to have a plan B, whether that's an Andy Carroll comes on, whether that's a Ricky Lambert comes on. You need to have this plan B. And I think, we talk about philosophies and I think identities. England have always struggled with that. But you've got to change. You've got to, it's all about winning games of football, really. And if you've got to do something to win a game of football, go and do it. If you've got to go and do something else, you need to go and do that. But I just think, all of a sudden, we've got this sort of pace, but you need to be really solid and defend really, really well for that pace to count. It's no good having these players, four or five forward-thinking players that are going forward if you're going to be really isolated at the back. And I think Roy Hodgson got the balance very, very poorly in the World Cup.
You compare him to Louis van Gaal, who, against Spain, utilised his pace beautifully. And then, against Mexico, you look where he did. He took his best striker off. You know, he took Van Persie off and he changed things around and he knocked the ball in. He went for a plan B. You know, he's going to be in the Premier League with Manchester United next year. I think he's going to be one of the most entertaining managers we've seen for a long, long time. I think he might even be more entertaining than Mourinho. But you look at what he did and you see the way his team changed, the style and the way they kept the shape and the patience. And it makes Roy Hodgson look a little bit foolish.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Doesn't it, James, in Brazil?
Van Gaal has excelled himself at this tournament. It's quite interesting, though, Tony. You speak to the Dutch media, and there's been this sort of running battle between them and Louis van Gaal throughout the tournament. They've been quite critical back in Holland of his switch to a 5-3-2. I've taken a different viewpoint. The way he has sort of turned games in the second half, particularly the introduction of his substitutes, notably Memphis Depay, who's been outstanding, I think, coming off the bench and used as an impact substitute, really sort of sets him apart. The Dutch media are arguing, well, if you set up the team better to begin with, we won't be having to chase games. I don't agree with that. He always seems to be able to find a solution. I think one of the things that strikes me with Holland is that you talk about pace, and you talk about that pace that England have, but with Holland, it's pace with control. Robin is an extremely fast player, accelerates away, but it's pace with great control, great precision. And as James was saying before, we've seen that sort of exploited to sort of brilliant effect on the counter-attack.
You know what my favourite thing about the Holland team is? They've got butch names, Ron, Dirk, Bruno, and for that reason, I hope they go on and win it. I'm Tony Evans. This is the Game World Cup podcast from The Times. Now we're going to talk about the games to come. We've talked about what's happened. We're going to talk about what's in the future. And I'll tell you what, it's been so exciting. They've already equaled the number of goals from South Africa. And we've got so much good stuff to come. James, the next player, is your mouth watering looking forward to some of these matches that are coming up?
Well, it's just game after game, isn't it? Every game, especially now that it's knockout games. Even last night's game, Greece-Costa Rica. To start with, you think, but it ended up, absolutely fascinating game of football, and it goes to penalties. Just looking for, through tomorrow, France-Nigeria, I think will be good. I quite like the French. I think they've approached the tournament in the right way and look exciting. Germany as well, I think, out of the best organisation, we're talking about how well Holland are organised, I think Germany are very well organised as well.
People haven't really been talking about the Germans. They haven't got excited about them yet. I think it's going to happen any second, isn't it?
But if you look at it, a lot of teams like Brazil are very reliant on Neymar. Argentina are very reliant on Messi. But if you look at Germany, they haven't really got any standout stars. Maybe that's why that they've sort of gone under the radar, really. But what they are, they're a team, and I think they're a very good team as well. They may be just struggling. They don't have the world-class centre-forwards, but, Müller knows where the back of the net is.
James, you're in Sao Paulo. What's the mood like that? How excited are people? And do you see Brazil's lack of a cutting edge up front as being a drawback for them?
Yeah, I do. I mean, we obviously ran that piece, Tony, on Saturday, didn't we, about Alexandre Pato, who most Brazilians thought would be the centre-forward and the star of this tournament alongside, Neymar in the run-up to it a few years ago. You know, Fred is a quite an unrefined sort of figure, very sort of un-Brazilian, and I don't think he's a brilliant target man, and it's put considerable pressure on Neymar to deliver. That said, I do think Neymar benefits from having a sort of a classic sort of burly number nine ahead of him. I know sort of a lot of the guys in Spain last season said that they felt he suffered a little bit at times for the lack of that, and sort of being switched across all three of the front three spots. He is at his best sort of drifting in from that wide left position. He looks most comfortable there. He's been quite actually vocal talking about that over here, Tony. He likes to be able to roam in. He gives him some space, and Fred's an actual decent foil for him. But I do think, I think he's been a joy to watch. I think it's remarkable for a 22-year-old to sort of just look so effortless, and it just doesn't look like the pressure is remotely affecting him. That penalty, in the last 16 was just brilliantly taken. he would probably argue that that he benefited from that. But if they had a top class centre half, top class centre forward, they would be better. My concern though goes back to the defence. I think the central defence is weak, and I think the fullbacks are susceptible. They do get forward. There's a lot of space to exploit behind them, which is why I think it was quite nice to see Fernandinho start, you know, against Chile. I think, you know, he does offer them a lot more in central midfield. I wouldn't be surprised if you saw him a lot now for the remainder of the tournament.
James, in France, do you think that Colombia will get a lot of space between the Brazil midfield and defence, and they can exploit the sort of weaknesses that we've seen from David Luiz and Thiago Silva?
Yeah, I do. I think if you look at Brazil as a team, I think they're great when they've got the ball, but when they haven't got the ball, they're not so great, really. And that's ultimately, that can cause big, big problems, really, teams. There's very few successful teams that, when they haven't got the ball, can get away with that, really. And I think that is Brazil's fault. And I think if you get a well-organised team against them that can pick up in little gaps, especially between the midfield and defence, I think they will cause Brazil problems, you know, especially at times if they overcommit and they lack discipline, really. I think it'll be a good game. I think it'll be another tense game. I could well see it going to penalties.
James, do you think Colombia have got a chance of beating them?
Yeah, absolutely. They are a potent attacking force. I think, I mean, obviously James Rodriguez is sort of caught all the attention. I'm quite sure people are sort of talking about him almost as an unknown. He cost Monaco nearly £38 million. But he is on fire, and his confidence couldn't be higher. But they are a really slick attacking force. I think Roberto Martinez, one of our columnists, was tipped them as one of their dark horses for the start of the tournament, so they're a real potent force going forward. I think the concern for me with them, again, is defensively, and also just whether there is that real sort of conviction about them that they feel that they can go really, really far in this tournament. You know, against, I think, what's quite a limited Uruguay side, I was disappointed with Colombia for the last 30 minutes. They really let Uruguay back into that game. Uruguay squandered some good chances, and I'm sure if Luis Suarez had been playing in that game, Uruguay would have nicked a goal back and set up a very, very tense finale. As it was, they sort of got through it. But I, as much as I think the likes of Rodriguez can hurt that Brazil defence, I'm sure Neymar will be licking his lips at the sort of prospect of running in behind that Colombian midfield and sort of pressing onto their centre halves.
Before we finish up, I want to get the professional view of who's going to win this World Cup. James, come on, tell us.
I went for Argentina before the World Cup, because you just look at the array of talent they've got going forward. And if Messi did perform, which he has performed at the moment, I think he would carry them across the line. So I'll stick with them. But it's honestly wide open. You know, James is just talking about Colombia, and maybe they don't believe that they could go that far. Well, they've only got to win two games and are in the final. You know, this is, you're getting down to elite football now, where winning and losing is a very fine margin. So, but I'm going to stick with Argentina.
And James, you've been away in Brazil for a month or so. Your time's coming to an end as the tournament comes up. What struck you about it, and who's going to win it?
Yeah, I'm very sad to be going. It's been a remarkable tournament. In terms of the football, you know, what struck me is a few things. Being a rich sort of array of attacking football, I think we sort of benefit from the fact that the defences aren't brilliant, but we have just some exceptional forward players at this tournament. One of the unspoken sort of things I really liked is that the referees have let the games flow. Yeah, there have been a couple of contentious penalty decisions. Yeah, there's been the odd strange tackle that's gone unpunished. But for the most part, they really have let the game flow. I know there's been a mandate down from FIFA to encourage that, but They have really excelled themselves, I think, at this tournament. And in terms of just Brazil generally, obviously there was a load of horror stories, you know, in the build up to the tournament. Having seen sort of Sao Paulo and Porto Alegre at close quarters, I think it's terrible that there will be no sort of sustained social and economic legacy here. They are crying out for sort of improved infrastructure, and yet, despite that, they have really sort of made this tournament work. There is a sense that they begrudge sort of FIFA and the authorities greatly, and there has obviously been a lot of protests, and there's some immense bitterness there. But I think that might sort of be truly felt come the elections later in the year. But they've really sort of made the tournament work. The airports have actually all run pretty smoothly, but there is sort of been a a great sort of spirit about it. For a country with sort of quite a violent and sort of checkered history, they are incredibly friendly people. What I do think is crucial is that obviously Brazil stay in the tournament. I was pleased that they got past Chile, just because I think if they do go out, there will be an enormous sense of deflation in the country. And I think that's when sort of the bitterness about the cost of staging the tournament might really sort of come out. But at the moment, the sort of football is having a unifying effect. And after sort of some initial sort of scepticism, the Brazilians seem to sort of really be getting behind the national team now.
Going back to the refereeing, I totally agree with you there. And I think that's been one of the most refreshing parts of the World Cup. I was a bit worried that it's going to be full of yellow cards, full of red cards, and just full of people diving around. Do you think you'd like to see that now in the Premier League? Because I actually, you know, looking at the games, I think in players would never get away with that in the Premier League these days. It'd be nice now to sort of see in the Premier League, to see a sliding tackle go in. And if it's slightly mischimed, then, well, it's not the end of the world. But someone doesn't get a red card for a challenge, which you think, well, he's only trying to go and win the ball there.
I couldn't agree with you more, James. I think it would be a great benefit to the football. I think, I mean, a lot of our sort of European counterparts would say that in England they do let the game flow more than they might do in Italy or Spain. But I do think that the powers that be can sort of look at this tournament and think, you know what, there is a lot to be said for letting some things go. I do think at times we try and over-police the game. That doesn't mean that some horrendous tackle doesn't warrant, you know, severe punishment. I think the problem is, James, and we've talked about this in the past, is that someone commits a bad tackle, and rather than sort of focusing on that and the need to sort of cut out just horrendously timed, reckless challenges, the sort of debate widens to the point where it sort of becomes a little bit irrational, and people are trying to urge referees to clamp down on everything and anything that happens. And you've got to remember, football is a physical game. It is played at great pace, even greater pace now. And clearly there are going to be mistimed challenges. Things are going to go wrong. And that's just sort of, I suppose, it's one of the inevitabilities, but also one of the beauties of the sport. But
and at that point, like a referee, I'm going to have to blow the whistle on this Times podcast. This is the Game World Cup podcast. And many thanks to my guest, James Scowcroft, who gave us that expert analysis, the view from the inside. And James Tucker, who gave us that potent mix of football reportage and political comment. We'll give you a guest direct from Brazil every Monday during the World Cup, so don't forget to tune into the Game podcast. It's invariably brilliant, and I won't be presenting it, so you don't have to worry about that. And read about all the latest news from Brazil in the Times. When the games are on, we do a 16-page game, 12-page game. I'll tell you what, they're brilliant. I've aged 10 years. It's the most balanced team in the World Cup. The writers who are doing it from Brazil, Ollie Kay, James Ducker, Matt Dickinson, Rory Smith, Matt Hughes, and it's superb. So if you don't buy it, I'm going to come looking for you. We'll be back next week, and I'll see you all soon.
Hi, I'm Tim Montgomery, the presenter of another Times podcast from the opinion pages called Did You Read? It's the perfect weekly snapshot of some of the best writing in the newspaper. Find out more by heading to thetimes.co.uk/commentcentral and search Did You Read to subscribe on iTunes.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Hi, I'm Jane Garvey.
And I'm Fee Glover.
Off Air with Jane and Fee is going live.
We are taking to the stage at the amazing Crucible Theatre in Sheffield on Friday, the 31st of May.
It'll be a night full of surprises. We'll have a special guest, we'll involve you in the audience, and we'll embarrass ourselves. You really won't want to miss it.
Well, the surprise is we don't yet know what's in it, so it genuinely is a night of surprises.
Well, you've surprised me already. It's not just us. Our live show is part of an exciting new podcast festival called Crosswires, which is taking place in some really amazing venues across Sheffield from the 31st of May to the 2nd of June.
So other podcasters that you'll be able to see include Katie Price, Catherine Ryan, Ramesh Ranganathan, and the original Adam Buxton. But there's also a whole host of free fringe events, family shows, surprise acts, and after parties that Jane and I haven't yet been invited to.
I'm sure it's only a matter of time. Head to crosswires.live for tickets and more information.